as I was mentioning in the first part, it delays decisions, it leads to inconsistent conclusions, and it also increases parent distrust. It is already a stressful situation to be around the table for many families, and then to have a team that's not prepared or doesn't have the data that supports what they're saying, it's very challenging. A strong referral packet, a strong data set is going to be clear. It's going to have confidence within it. It's going to be defendable. Remember that a parent can listen to all of the team's evaluations and disagree with an evaluation and ask for an independent educational evaluation, which the district would either grant or would move forward with a due process hearing. Those are all the procedural safeguards that are in place for students with disabilities and their families. However, when we do our due diligence and we are careful and data-driven, that is less likely to occur. And it's also about building that relationship with the family. So in addition to this, I wanted to touch upon least restrictive environment. And as we know, this can be a little bit of a challenge for teams to determine, but what it really is about is that students must be educated with non-disabled peers to the extent, the maximum extent possible. And this is important in eligibility because we're making decisions based on the child's eligibility and needs to then go forward with an IEP and services, and where those services take place are going to be critically important. They could be for a particular child, say a child who maybe has a specific learning disability, could do very well in general education, continuing in full general education with co-teaching by a special education teacher, or maybe that particular child would need small group pullout instruction and multi-sensory reading. You would be making that decision based on each child and what their needs are as to what their least restrictive environment is based on the data that you've collected in your assessments. And based on, how you are going to meet their instructional needs and their functional needs as well. And so sometimes a student has a level of need that they need a full-on program that is specially designed. We have those in my district where we have students that spend the majority of their time in a special classroom receiving special education supports, and then they have time with non-disabled peers in a variety of formats throughout their day. And that's always a consideration of what that looks like and whether a child spends 80% or more of their time in general education or less than that, or even less than, 40% of the time, which would be some of our special classroom students. But the point here is that we would use assessment and the data that we have, the collection of the data that we have, along with the rest of the assessment team and what we know about the child, and based on that and their educational needs, how we would best place the child and what that means for their school day. So, sometimes parents will request a more restrictive placement because, especially in initial evaluation for special education, because they feel like more is better and, my child needs one-to-one supports. And, those are all careful considerations and conversations that you have around the table. In addition to that, we need to make sure that the placement of services is appropriate, again, specific to each of those students. So consider this particular scenario. If a student, say, is in sixth grade and has come up as a concern with significant behavioral needs, and the school team has, looked at some interventions and have actually done some interventions in counseling, and the student has a behavior plan and there are classroom supports, yet the behavior continues to escalate, the team has to come together to determine whether or not the student can be educated fully in the general education classroom with supports based on data collection and potentially further assessment, or what the least restrictive environment is where the child can succeed. And that could look like more supported classroom or additional resource teacher time. It could be a whole host of things, but what it isn't is just a rubber stamp, this is what we do here, on each IEP. that is absolutely not appropriate. So we have to remember it's very much tied to what the student is needing. And it must be individualized, just like your assessments are all going to be, you know, have different results. It's the same thing in a lot of ways, very connected. We have to think about what meaningful progress looks like for each of our students. So as you know, once eligibility has been established, that does not mean it's permanent. Students must be reviewed annually through the IEP cycle, as well as every 3 years for the triennial evaluation, where the team comes together to determine what evaluations are needed to redetermine eligibility every 3 years. That is not to say that you are not collecting very rich and high quality data on IEPs, on the IEP that the child has or any child has in terms of progress monitoring and how they're doing on all of the universal screeners, as well as the teacher created and curriculum based measurements as well. So it's a constant state of assessment and evaluation, and eligibility can, you know, be ended. A child isn't necessarily forever and always going to be eligible for special education. And again, we go back to those criteria. Is there a disability? Is there an adverse impact? Is there a need for specially designed instruction? So for example, if a student is in high school, maybe has had a history of supports in special education throughout their school career, and you know, they get to high school and these supports have been, you know, really productive and have worked well for this child, and the child's meeting all academic expectations and needs minimal support and has a strong and high level of independence, we have to stop and think and consider, does this child still need and require special education? And this is where teams are hesitant, you know, of ending services. We have to be very mindful of what that looks like. But students do exit special education. And again, it's all based on the data and what the, how the student is operating at that time and what's happening for that child. You know, maintaining eligibility without a need is just as much a problem as failing to identify a student who's struggling as a student with a potential disability. And so also just again to touch upon the IEP, as this is kind of like leading you into the IEP class, if you have not taken it, or a good review for you if you have. But the IEP is the instructional blueprint. It's the cornerstone of special education, whereas assessment is the foundation. The IEP connects evaluation directly to the document through goals and services and the supports. You've been practicing with that in writing a present level of academic performance and also writing a present level of functional performance. You know, because you've also been looking at writing a SMART goal that is measurable, specific and measurable, attainable, and is, you know, relevant and is time bound. We need to make sure that our goals are measurable, as are our objectives, and the objectives are steps to the goal, right? And as IEP providers and case managers and special educators, we're progress monitoring, we're looking at accommodations and services. Accommodations are not just on the IEP, those are part of our instructional practice, and you're also doing those as well, a nice job with those. And you've had some practice too in your evaluation. Those recommendations kind of lead us into some accommodations on the IEP. So they're all related. We want to make sure that we're in compliance, but we don't want weak present levels. We don't want big goals, and we don't want a misalignment between the student's actual needs and what their services are. So an example of that, in a school not to be named long, long ago, is thinking about how a teacher, you know, an IEP might look where it's less special education teacher and more paraeducator assigned in the general education class. You know, looking at how that child is serviced. If there's less special education, but there's more need, then we need more special education, right? So it's always having those conversations. So for example, you know, in if you had in an IEP, you saw the statement, something that read, he struggles with reading comprehension. We know, right, that this is not sufficient, right? It's not going to be sufficient in an educational evaluation or a description, you know, if that's all you said to a parent. You want to give specifics in the IEP. You want to give specific skill deficits and strengths. We know that. But baseline data, what is the student doing right now? You know, what does the progress look like? You know, providing measurable goals that we can say, here, this is what was happening in quarter one, and this is what's happening in quarter two, and really have that information. And instructional supports, what supports are needed in that reading comprehension? What do you mean he struggles in reading comprehension? What does that look like for that particular student? And again, some of the most important principles here are that present levels drive everything. You have gotten the present levels from your educational evaluation, and you're moving into the instructional piece, the IEP, you've found the child eligible. We need to understand the academics, the social pieces, the physical needs of the student, the management needs of the student. And if those levels are weak, the whole IEP is compromised. So let's just take a quick step back, right? We have come full circle now. The process is sequential in special education. So we have an area of concern. We go to referral. We do a comprehensive evaluation. We determine eligibility. We consider placement. We write a comprehensive high-quality IEP, because you're all not going to write anything less than that, just like your evaluations. And then you review for progress. Each step is contingent upon the one before, and a breakdown in any of these areas compromises the student, right? And what they're getting and the kind of supports that they have. So, you know, we need to consider students that are over-identified or students that are under-identified and students that have poorly written IEPs. Each of those experiences limit outcomes for our students. And it's not because you're intending to do that, but it's just because there are systems breakdowns. So just like a couple of the examples just in this conversation, we have to be mindful that not all of the students that have challenges are going to be identified as students eligible under IDEA needing an IEP. And there are going to be students that are sometimes missed. And it's our obligation by law to find those students and to match them with appropriate evaluation and determination of whether or not they qualify as a child with a disability. And of course, a poorly written IEP can lead to a whole host of issues, as does a poorly written educational evaluation. So as you take these two pieces of information, and which reviewed the last couple of chapters in your text, and you're preparing for your discussion post and writing about your reflection, I want you just to think about the eligibility process overall and what you've learned in the class and where you could be vulnerable to error in the educational assessment process or eligibility process, how a team would be vulnerable to error, how strength of the referral packet and the data you collect is so important, and also what placement looks like for students in practice in your schoolhouses, not just in theory. So just as we sign off here, you know, the work that we have discussed all semester has been complex, and it should be, because these are big decisions for students, and because we're designing access to opportunity for them, students with disabilities. There is no greater work. It is an honor to be a special educator. It is the hardest, most challenging job I think you will ever have, and it is the most rewarding experience. So I wish you all so well, and I hope to hear from you, and I look forward to reading your reflections, and also it has been an absolute pleasure.